Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 18th of November. Mondays at 1 o'clock, all things political. Last week, a Quinnipiac University poll showed President Obama with the lowest approval rating of his presidency. Only 39% approved of his performance, 54% disapproved, and a recent Pew survey shows the president's job approval at 41% with 53% disapproving. Fixing the website might be important. What else would be important? How about fixing the economy? That's one of the suggestions of our guest this hour, who says that the rollout of healthcare.gov has been a fiasco, and yes, it will harm the administration if it is not fixed, but comparing it, as was done over the last couple days, to a deadly hurricane is ludicrous. We'll talk about that. We will look at the economy. We'll look at approval ratings for Congress this hour. We'll talk about Elizabeth Warren and whether or not she can beat Hillary Clinton. And we'll look at a lot of these judicial nominations that have been held up over the last couple of weeks. What's that all about? And we'll welcome your phone calls. Our guest for All Things Political this hour is Jamel Bowie. He's a staff writer at The Daily Beast. His reporting and analysis has appeared in The American Prospect, The Nation, The Atlantic, CNN.com, and The Washington Post. He covers campaigns, elections, and policy and public opinion. We'll be welcoming phone calls for the hour, and our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Please feel free to leave messages there whenever you would like. Hello, Jamel. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our great pleasure. Well, let's start with those poll numbers because the president must be very disappointed in these, and I want to figure out what's the reason for them. 39% approving of his performance, 54% disapproving. You would suggest that it's more than the health care fiasco.
Yes. There's a pretty clear correlation just over history between a president's approval ratings and the state of the economy. And when you look at the sluggish economy at the moment, when you look at the persistently high unemployment, it makes sense that his approval rating would drop to below 40. Though it should be said that this week his approval rating is back into the mid-40s. So that poll may have been sort of on the low end of the spread we could expect for a president's approval rating.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's look at what's happened with the healthcare rollout. I have yet to hear anybody explain to me, and maybe you can do this, why it is so hard to get this website fully up and running. Why?
I think it's a combination of factors. The first is sort of simple mismanagement. The first is time. The administration only started building the website in earnest this year, and something like this, which requires sort of complex back and forth between the federal government's websites, state government websites, insurers, and so on and so forth, really requires more than just a year to even develop and roll out. You need time to build it. You need time to test it, so on and so forth. So there's time. There is mismanagement in HHS, in the White House, not enough communication, not enough scrutiny given to what was happening. And then there is an entire, broken federal procurement process in which it's very difficult for federal agencies to actually recruit the best possible people to build things like this. So in a lot of ways, it was almost a perfect storm of bad circumstances and bad choices.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea, have you heard from the administration, Jamel, as to when this is going to be fully functioning?
The administration insists that this will be fully functioning for most people who use it, which is a nice little, I wouldn't say weasel term, but simply a leeway term, by December. Other reporters, other analysts are skeptical that this will be the case. I don't have any special insight in whether it'll be the case. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. But judging from everything I've read, the underlying problems aren't complicated. They're just time-consuming.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can make headway on them, I actually do think that by this deadline, the website will be working for most people. When it will be working for everyone who uses it is a different question.
Mm-hmm. And what about his announcement last week that you can keep the policy you have, even though it's not what it should be when you look at health care reform, for at least a year? Did that placate people or not?
I think it did. I mean, I think you have to recognize that most people, the people that was meant for, weren't individual consumers. A lot of these plans have already been canceled. Insurance companies aren't offering them anymore. And so the number of people who would be affected by this rule change is pretty small, especially since individual states and insurers have to go ahead with it. If they don't want to, they don't have to. I think what this, the audience for this rule change was congressional Democrats who were feeling very skittish over the rash of people losing their existing health care coverage. And I think it was meant to sort of give them the rhetorical space to last this out a little while longer. Since, I mean, the fact of the matter is that people were losing those plans by design. Most of those plans did not cover serious medical care. If you had one of these, you know, $50 a month, $100 a month catastrophic plans, if you got, say, hit by a bus, you wouldn't, odds are good it wouldn't even cover your hospital stay. So the whole idea was for these plans to be phased out and replaced with actual health insurance that does provide meaningful benefits.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how fortunes have changed so rapidly. The conversation, as you well know, over the last few days is from worried Democrats, from people who are pundits who are saying they run the risk of losing the Senate, the Democrats do, because this is such a fiasco. Does this indicate really bad political news for the Democrats, this particular issue?
I think it's obvious that in the short term, this has not been good for Democrats. It has hurt their standing. The public is, because of the shutdown, the public is angry at Washington anyway, and this doesn't make things better. But I would caution anyone against trying to draw a conclusion for the next year. A lot of things can happen in a year, and we really don't know what the environment will look like for next year's midterm election. So if I were a Democratic strategist, my response would just be try as best as you can to placate your constituents and try as best as you can to show how the law is benefiting them and how everything is working out in their favor. But don't panic, because panic can build upon itself and result in a truly bad political situation.
Mm-hmm.
If Democrats were to do something that undermines health care, it would be much more destructive to their political chances long term than just waiting it out.
And I guess you have to have the website up and running, Jamel, don't you, in order to answer that question that you just raised. How many people are benefiting from this? We won't know until the numbers start going up.
That's correct. As far as people in the individual market are concerned, that website needs to be up and running. You can still point to people who've been enrolled in Medicaid. Of course, there's the big problem of 21 states who have refused to expand Medicaid, which is cutting off actually a large chunk of the people who would be eligible for the Medicaid expansion. So I actually think what Democrats really need to focus on is getting more states to expand their Medicaid coverage by sort of any way possible.
Isn't it absolutely amazing how incredibly difficult this issue is in this country?
I'll say I'm a supporter of the Affordable Care Act. I think on the balance, it will be a good thing for Americans. But I get the skepticism and the opposition. It is a transformative law. It will change the status quo in big ways. And whenever you do that, you're going to inspire opposition from people who benefit from the status quo. And then, you know, there's a long, long history of expansions of the social safety net inspiring very, very, virulent opposition. When Medicare was on the table, Ronald Reagan gave a barnstorming speech against it during the 1964 Republican National Convention, saying to his audience that, if Medicare is passed, then one day we'll remember the time when men could be free. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that kind of hyperbolic opposition is nothing new. So, you know, I support the law, but I get the opposition.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in one of your pieces, you said the rollout of healthcare.gov is nothing like Hurricane Katrina. It's been a fiasco, and yes, it will harm the administration if it isn't fixed, but comparing it to a deadly hurricane is ludicrous. That's what the New York Times did on Friday, last Friday's paper, in which they said they made such a comparison that the disastrous rollout of his health care law, they wrote, not only threatens the rest of his agenda, but also raises questions about his competence in the same way that the Bush administration's botched response to Hurricane Katrina undermined any semblance of Republican efficacy. Why not make the comparison?
I think there's two reasons not to make the comparison. The first is that I think whenever you're talking about politics, you really ought to take things on their own terms. And for all the problems of the healthcare rollout, it just seems on its face absurd to me to compare it to the administration's response to a deadly storm that killed a lot of people, and the response, the slowness of the response, the ineptitude of the response also cost lives. And for all that anyone can complain about the healthcare.gov rollout, it's hard to say, in fact, it's impossible to say that it's cost lives. The second reason is that I'm not actually sure it's a good comparison on the merits. The striking thing about the Bush administration's response to Hurricane Katrina was the extent to which it was characterized by ignoring warnings, by disregarding preparation, by sort of doing everything possible, seemingly doing everything possible not to prepare for the hurricane. And then when it became clear that this non-response was a problem, blaming it on local government, trying to evade responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. The problems with healthcare.gov are partially a product of incompetence and partially a product of mismanagement, but nowhere near not mismanagement on the scale that you're seeing, that you saw with Katrina. It's almost a sort of banal mismanagement that happens in the federal government when complex projects are undertaken. And it's noteworthy that the administration has never tried to pass the buck. I mean, Obama held a long press conference claiming complete responsibility for the failures of the website. So it's two very different kinds of managerial incompetence, and I'm not sure it's wise to compare the two. I think it actually ends up obscuring more than it explains.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit more about the political ramifications here. Evidently, this is from somebody else on Daily Beast writing this. I'm sure you're familiar with these articles. Americans for Prosperity is running TV ads against the veteran congressman in West Virginia in a competitive district, tying him to the Affordable Care Act. Democratic leadership is in a bind. The president not up for re-election, but the Democratic caucus up for re-election, and this is not helpful, according to Representative Jim Moran, Democrat from Virginia. How are Democrats responding to this? Are their fears justified that they could lose re-election over this? And what strategies are they following to win re-election?
Yeah, I think I'll say that I understand Democratic fears that they could lose re-election over this, but I think that ultimately their re-election chances will have more to do with the success of the policy than it will sort of their rhetorical stance on it. If Obamacare isn't working this time, or let's say next September, then there's no amount of distancing they can do to save themselves. Voters are actually when it comes to opposing or voicing discontent, voters should have just indiscriminately opposed incumbents. And so if 2014 is shaping up to be another 2010, there's not really much they can do anyway. And I would think that lawmakers who are around for 2010 would see that all of the posturing and positioning that Blanche Lincoln did in Arkansas, or that any number of Blue Dog House members did in their districts, didn't save them from losing. So what they should hope for and what they should work towards is making sure this policy works as well as possible. With that said, you know, if vulnerable Democrats do want to, you know, not just sit on their hands, there is, you know, I suppose they can emphasize their differences with President Obama. They can try essentially to portray themselves as Obamacare skeptics without actually doing anything to harm the policy. But I sort of think that the Democratic Party as a whole is in it to win it or lose it. Either they'll all succeed with the Affordable Care Act or they all will fail with it. But there's no real way to avoid this at this point. And a good analogy is in last year's elections, you had Republicans in Virginia and Montana and Florida running for Senate, attempt to distance themselves from the National Republican Party, and it just wasn't possible.
Well, and then the thing that makes you wonder if anybody's going to vote in the next election is that Republicans, of course, how soon we forget these things, not very long ago, were blamed for the shutdown of the government. So the congressional approval ratings are at something like 9%. It leads you to believe that nobody's going to the polls at all next go around, Jamel.
Right. You know, we don't. It just remains to be. It remains to be emphasized that we really have no idea what things will look like a year from now.
We welcome phone calls. Jamel Bowie is our guest for All Things Political, staff writer at the Daily Beast, and we're talking, of course, about what's been in the news the last week, and that's what's happened with the Affordable Care Act, the president's press conference last week in which he took personal responsibility for saying that you could keep your health plan when indeed the system wouldn't work if everybody kept those very inexpensive plans that don't cover very much. So he said, okay, well, you can keep them for a year, a temporary fix on this. The website is better, I understand, but it's still not fully up and running. And so Democrats are getting concerned because Republicans are tying Democrats to the Affordable Care Act and television ads that have already started in some states. Will that be a strategy that will work for Republicans? What do you think the president could do to boost his ratings? And some of those had to do with confidence ratings, which must be, and trustworthiness, which must be troubling to this president because he's always had high marks for trustworthiness. So let's talk about that. And we have other issues to talk about as well. There are little conversations taking place that maybe Elizabeth Warren is going to jump in the race for the presidency and will perhaps challenge Hillary Clinton. Jamel has written about that. He mentioned the economy, that if it were going very strongly, that we would not be as worried about all these other issues and the president's poll numbers would be higher. Let's spend some time talking about that. Do we need some kind of stimulus to the economy? But that's surely not going to happen considering the partisanship that's taking place in Washington right now. Well, here's our phone number. Branch into whatever you'd like for All Things Political, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. Our guest this hour for All Things Political, Jamel Bowie, staff writer at the Daily Beast. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And let's start our calls with Kay in La Crosse. Hi, Kay.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
I'm an independent voter. I don't care about either party. But the Republicans keep saying that, you know, the only thing that really kills them is Obamacare, and it's horrible, and they're going to shut down the government if they have to, and they'll do anything they have to do to get rid of Obamacare. Kind of makes you wonder if their hands are in the cookie jar with this computer stuff.
There were some reports last week that the website had been hacked by a number of times. Do you know anything more on that, Jamel?
I also heard that there is an attempted, or at least the code for what's called a denial of service attack against the website, but I don't think that's the issue. if that were the case, you wouldn't be able to actually visit healthcare.gov. The actual problem is that folks, the website times out when you attempt to submit information for an application or so on and so forth, which is a signal that what's happening is that something in the back end, some connection is broken or isn't missing.
I see. It says something, though, that Kay would wonder that, doesn't it? And that there would be reports on that. It says that we don't trust anybody.
Right, right. No, absolutely. I actually would be surprised if there were not at least groups of people in the grassroots trying to figure out some way to crash the website using, again, a denial of service attack or whatever else method you can use to bring down a website.
Thanks, Kay, for the call. Gloria from Platteville wants to know, why is our system so much more complicated than that of Canada or Britain? Did we have to bow down to the insurance companies?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of it's just a function of choices made a long time ago. During the Second World War, for instance, as a way of increasing, as a way of kind of reducing taxes on companies that were contributing to the war effort, the federal government made health insurance coverage tax deductible. So if you were an employer and you provided health insurance to your employees, you could take that money. You weren't taxed on that money. This wasn't an issue when healthcare coverage was pretty cheap, was pretty rudimentary. But as the decades went on and became more and more expensive and became more and more kind of a standard package at a lot of employers, it kind of grew into a large part of the economy. And it's hard to dismantle something like that. You can't just, for as much as you would want to rip off that Band-Aid, and healthcare policymakers on both the left and right agree that that's a Band-Aid that needs to be ripped off, it would be incredibly disruptive to the entire economy. What we're witnessing now with people getting with a small minority of people getting their covers canceled would expand many times if we were just to do something like end the employer exemption for health insurance, to say nothing of proposals from the left of expanding Medicare to cover everyone, or proposals from the right to create universal catastrophic insurance. Both of those things are hugely disruptive. And so if your goal is actually to get things through Congress, you want to take the path of least resistance. And for all of its complications, the Affordable Care Act, by maintaining the basic structure of our health insurance system, is the, you know, path of least resistance.
Patrick is next. Hi, Patrick.
Hi.
Hi.
I was I heard you talking about the comparison between the failure of Obamacare and Hurricane Katrina, and I was thinking that Superstorm Sandy is Obama's Katrina, because he did kind of make promises that he was going to rebuild that area, and according to the news reports, very little of it has been rebuilt. And it seems that Obamacare is actually more like his Iraq war, because it affects so many more Americans.
What is not rebuilt? New Jersey, New York?
Right. That whole area that was just wrecked by Superstorm Sandy, is very little of it has been rebuilt.
Is that a fair assessment, Jamil?
I think... with regards to Superstorm Sandy, a large amount of funding has gone to those areas to be rebuilt. There, I believe, I don't live in the area, so I'm not actually entirely sure, but I believe that they are in the process of being rebuilt. And I'll say that even Sandy, I'm not quite sure, is a good comparison to make. With Katrina, again, it wasn't just that they're caught unawares or unprepared, but that there is really no effort at all to deal with the immediate aftermath of the storm, which wasn't the case with Sandy. Immediately after Sandy, there is federal response organized to deal with the aftermath.
Let's go to Bob in Eau Claire. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how y'all doing today?
All right, how are you?
I'm good, and I want to declare right at the beginning that I am all things Obama. So you know where I'm coming from. This whole thing has started because there were some traitors in our country, traitors, Republicans, same thing, who have stopped and blocked and delayed and opt you skated, and then went on TV, and rather than help our country and bring it forward, they stopped. They have stopped being what I thought were people that could work together into these. They hate Obama. I can't figure it out. He's such a wonderful president. But they have poisoned the atmosphere against him with their hate. I kind of liken it to, I want to build a really nice building, only people won't give me electricity, people won't give me water, people won't give me construction materials, and they won't build the road. And those are all Republicans doing that.
Thanks, Bob, for your comments. Jamil.
I'm not sure I would call Republicans traitors, just because I know quite a few of them and we're on very good terms and I like them quite a bit. I think so. Two things are true. The first is that this sort of opposition to a Democratic president isn't new. Bill Clinton saw something very similar when he was president. It is the case that there are many Americans who are very, very sincerely opposed to policies from Democratic presidents, and they act accordingly. I will agree that I do think that the opposition to the Affordable Care Act in particular is a little unusual. Typically, when parties are confronted with policies they do not like, they oppose them, they disagree with them, but they also try to govern with them in mind. And so after the passage of Medicare Part D in 2002, Democrats didn't declare that they were never going to implement it or they were going to resist it. What they did was they continued to run against it. They continued to complain about it. But when their constituency did help trying to access the benefits, when they saw that there are things that could be fixed, they worked to fix them. I think Republicans can do the same with the Affordable Care Act. In states like Arkansas, for instance, Republicans are, rather than rejecting the Medicaid expansion, they're using the money from the Medicaid expansion to change their healthcare system in a way that's favorable to conservative principles. And that's something you can do. But the sort of categorical, constant opposition that we're seeing now is genuinely unusual, and I'm not sure if it's motivated by, you know, just plain old Obama hatred, or a sense that if they don't stop Obamacare in full, then they'll never have a chance. They'll never have a chance to implement their small government beliefs.
Thanks, Bob, very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. You've written about some other blocking that's going on, and that's judicial appointments to the Washington, D.C. Circuit Court. Two nominations in the past 2 weeks have been subject to filibuster. Is that correct?
That's correct. I just suddenly blanked on the names, but two nominees to the D.C. Circuit Court have been filibustered. Obama's expected to make a third nomination. That person is expected also to be filibustered.
And why?
That is an interesting question. It depends. I think it depends on where you stand. Republicans would say that they're filibustering because the court has a low workload and doesn't need any more judges on it. It's currently split evenly, four Republicans, four Democrats, or rather four judges appointed by Republicans, four judges appointed by Democrats. But I believe that the chief justice of that court, or the senior justice, is a Republican. And so the court has often, at least over the last 3 years, ruled strongly in favor of Republicans, striking down Obama administration regulations on pollution.
I see.
Striking down recess appointments, striking down a key regulation in the Affordable Care Act with regards to contraception. I think Democrats would say that they don't have enough work, so we don't need any more. It's just an excuse, and that what Republicans are trying to do is preserve a balance that benefits them. And so Democrats, and I myself see the similarly, see the filibusters not as as a good faith attempt to maintain a balance, but really as an attempt to keep Obama from putting his stamp on this court, which is a very, very important court for federal policymaking.
Joe in Cambridge, hi.
Hi, I just want to make a quick point agreeing with one of the previous callers, and that is that it seems that, especially with the Republican Party, that there is such a tendency, not so much for small government, but a tendency to put the party first and Americans second. And when you compare Katrina, you know, with the past Republican Bush reign, and you compare Katrina to the Affordable Care Act, you know, and I think they are comparable, except that with the whole invasion of Iraq and Katrina, you know, Americans did kind of come together, and they wanted the problems to be solved, you know, of the post-invasion of Iraq and Katrina. And it wasn't so much criticizing the government just to blast Bush and the Bush administration. It was to make things better for America. And now what you're seeing is you're seeing all this criticism of Obama and the Obama administration, even with what you were talking with the filibusters for the court. Everything is to put the Republican Party first and somehow get them back in control with both houses and the presidency. And that's something that I can't agree with. You got to put America first and then worry about, you know, which party you're affiliated with. And I just think we're going in the wrong direction with all this criticism. So just a quick point. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Joe. Jamil.
I actually agree with a lot of that. I think that there is – that what's really striking about Republican opposition to the Affordable Care Act is that it doesn't come with an alternative. With the Iraq War, for instance, Democrats or opponents of the Iraq War, since for a while Democrats weren't necessarily opposed to the war, opponents of the Iraq War had a solution. They said we shouldn't be invading Iraq. We should be diverting our attention and our resources to Afghanistan. With the Medicare Part D, you had Democrats say we can do this cheaper. We can do this in a way that isn't just a unilateral giveaway to insurance companies. With the Affordable Care Act, Republicans don't actually have an alternative. Their slogan in the beginning was repeal and replace, but there is no replacement. It really does just seem to be an attempt to stop the administration from accomplishing something for the sake of stopping the administration from accomplishing something.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit more about the economy before we go back to phone calls. Many of them want to center on the Affordable Care Act, which is understandable, but you noted in a recent column that unemployment has ticked up slightly and that perhaps the economy is in need of some kind of stimulus, which is not going to happen considering what's going on in Washington right now. Are there other things that the president could do in order to get people working in jobs that will support their families and in jobs that will help people be able to go out and buy holiday presents or not? Is he stymied in that regard?
I think he's stymied in that regard. Unfortunately, you know, what the economy needs is a hefty dose of stimulus. There's still a big demand shortfall caused by the collapse of the housing market a couple years back. There aren't enough consumers buying things, aren't enough businesses hiring people because there's no one to buy stuff. And what the economy really does need is a burst of stimulus. The president's proposal from 2011, the American Jobs Act, would have injected $400 billion in the economy. And nonpartisan analysts predicted that injection of stimulus would have created upwards of 1 million jobs. And that's the sort of thing that would have really gotten the economy going. So on the legislative end, unless House Republicans decide that all of a sudden they're Keynesians, I doubt that we'll see any of the stimulus that we need to get the economy back on track. It is true, however, that the Federal Reserve still can do quite a bit to help improve the economy. If Janet Yellen is confirmed as the Federal Reserve chair, it would be great if her Federal Reserve could embark upon policies of monetary stimulus to set the inflation target a bit higher so that businesses and investors begin to say, oh, we have to spend our money now, lest it's worth a little less in a couple years. And that can begin to stimulate hiring and growth. A lot of economic policy management is setting expectations because if people act as if an expectation is true,
then in effect an expectation is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is something that could happen. But that really depends on Yellen's confirmation and whether or not the Federal Reserve Board is up for embarking on what would be an ambitious policy.
Do you, Jamel, see any problems with her confirmation?
I do, just because she's a Democratic appointee or nomination. She's well within the mainstream of economics. She was, she's served in the Federal Reserve system for quite a while. She's an excellent nominee, but Republicans seem really unwilling to confirm anyone Obama nominates to anything. So that would end up being the issue.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Jamel Bowie is our guest, and it's all things political here on the Ideas Network. He's staff writer at the Daily Beast, and one line is open if you'd like to grab it. You could do just that. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. It's all things political. Jamel Bowie is our guest, staff writer at the Daily Beast. And let's go to Joe in Prairie du Chien. Hello, Joe.
Hi. Excuse me. Hi. I voted for Obama both times. But one thing that struck me is that he's become more heavy-handed than I expected him to be. Drones, for one instance. And I'm wondering, is this a reaction to the political climate and world issues that he's been thrown at, or was this part of his personality? And also, I think people need to realize that when a politician promises something or says they can do it, it means they support it. And we're up against a system where there are no promises, per se. It's all compromise.
Jamel.
Yeah, with regards to drones and sort of Obama's national security policies, I also agree that it's been heavy-handed, and actually very strongly oppose President Obama's wide use of drone warfare. I think that it needs to be limited. I will say that I'm not sure if this is defending the president or just providing a little context for decision-making. But even in foreign policy, where presidents have a fair amount of leeway, they are also prisoners to events and prisoners to circumstances. And so it's not exactly hard to see how the president came to the conclusion that drone warfare is a better use of resources than committing more troops or committing manned aircraft, even for all of its problems. I think that's my main comment there, that it's heavy-handed but understandable, which doesn't mean you shouldn't oppose it, but just that it's not so much it's very much a product of circumstances.
What do you make of the terrorist threat to this country right now, Jamel?
I think this stuff isn't exactly my focus, but I will say that I think two things are true. That the first is that there are very much people who are working and planning to harm Americans both here and abroad. But I think the number of those people and the scale of their operations is much smaller than it was 12 years ago, much smaller than it was 5 years ago, probably much smaller than it was last year. That the scope of the threat isn't huge. It's manageable. It's something we can address without, I think, recourse to draconian national security policies, with recourse to mass surveillance, or any of the things that sort of come up over the last couple of years.
Let's go to a couple of emails. I'll read both of them and then say what you would like to. Judy in Fitchburg says, Representative Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee famously called the old individual insurance plans being canceled red solo cup plans. She said her constituents wanted to keep those old plans and not be forced to take the crystal stem plans being mandated by the Affordable Care Act. She asks, isn't it a fact that the canceled plans are substandard and don't include the 10 required categories of coverage? So why would anyone want to pay more for a red solo cup plan when they could buy a plan that actually could be counted on to cover what most people need covered?
And that is a fact that those plans did not meet the standards. I think, so for a long time, the status quo in American healthcare was that if you were healthier, you essentially get a financial reward for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a young, healthy man. My health insurance prior to, when I was on the individual market for a very short time, my health insurance was extremely cheap. I was being rewarded for health. And the converse of that is that people who are less healthy or people who have traits that would suggest more medical complications were penalized for it. And so I actually get why someone with a red solo cup plan might not want to get a more full-featured plan. But the fact of the matter is that they were benefiting from a system that was very unfair and that was harming sick people in a really big way. And so I part of me thinks, tough luck. One day you will be older. One day you will be sick. And when that day comes, you'll know that your insurance will provide for what you need. At the moment, those things aren't true, so you have to pay a little more. But you should think of it less of something being taken from you and more of a generational promise that for agreeing to subsidize the cost of sick people and older people today, tomorrow you will benefit from that subsidization in the other direction.
Sometimes we're not very good at we're all in this together, right?
Exactly.
Ricardo in Racine. Hello.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
My thoughts are fairly similar to some of them that had called in before. When Social Security was started, it took at least 5 years to get that plan going. And we know that affordable care is not going to go away. And I'm just wondering, so many of the Republicans are against it. My representative, Paul Ryan, won't even talk about it. Wouldn't they be better off if they'd say, let's work with the president and get this thing going like all other first-rate nations have it?
I think that's absolutely the case. There is a lot of, for as much as Republicans present the Affordable Care Act as a government takeover of healthcare, the fact of the matter is that it contains a lot of leeway and a lot of flexibility for states to pursue programs as they see fit. So I earlier mentioned in Arkansas, they are using the money for the Medicaid expansion to expand the coverage pool for their subsidies. So under, I guess, like vanilla Affordable Care Act, people up to, I think, 130% of the poverty line would be covered by Medicaid, and everyone else after that would get subsidies. What Arkansas is doing is not increasing the Medicaid eligibility, but saying that if you are in between 100 and 130% of the poverty line, you are also eligible for subsidies to buy private health insurance. This, for conservatives in Arkansas, is ideal. They cannot expand the government program, and they can get people more health insurance. And I believe Vermont, on the other hand, they're using their Medicaid money to try to create a single-payer system. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if conservatives were willing to work with the administration, they could see that there's a lot of room for experimentation and kind of branching out with new healthcare approaches that they refuse to, I think, in the long term, since this law isn't going away, would be a real detriment to their cause.
Thank you, Ricardo. Lines are open. If you've been trying to get through, now would be a good time for you to call because you would get through. Jamel Abouy is our guest, staff writer at the Daily Beast, and you are listening to All Things Political, which always happens Mondays at 1 here on the Ideas Network. Our conversation, understandably, has been centered on what the president said in his press conference last week about the Affordable Care Act, what people are experiencing, and what the political ramifications fallout might be for Democrats who are up for election. You also wrote about, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because, for heaven's sake, the election is a long way away, except that we got to ask you, is Elizabeth Warren, do you think, serious about running for president?
I don't think she is. One of her spokespeople today just said that she is not running for president, and while you should never, I don't think you should take that those declarations too seriously. Barack Obama repeatedly denied running his intention to run for president in 2005 and 2006. I also just don't, you know, Warren signed a letter saying that she'd support Hillary Clinton. She's repeatedly denied it. She's not doing any of the things that people who are running for president do. You know, you have Martin O'Malley in Maryland, the governor of Maryland, former mayor of Baltimore, taking trips to New Hampshire, to South Carolina, to Iowa. You have Rand Paul doing the same. But Elizabeth Warren doesn't do that. She, in fact, declined the chance to speak in Iowa because she didn't want to create presidential buzz. So, you know, I see the argument for a Warren candidacy, but I just do not believe that the senator is interested in running.
Mm-hmm. Jody on Facebook writes, she got stuck several different times on healthcare.gov at different glitches, but last Friday she started over with a new account and email and sailed right through, picked a plan, enrolled, no issues. So she says, if you're stuck, start over.
That sounds great.
That's a motto for life. If you are stuck, start over. Let's go to Lynn in Eau Claire next. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Kathleen and Gamel. I'm coming from a place where my husband's a federal employee. But I don't know much about the stock market. I know nothing about the stock market, but I see the numbers rising. We're middle class, and it concerns me the automatic naysaying of the Republicans and especially the Tea Party bunch of Republicans, that somebody's making bank on the automatic naysaying. And I never bought into conspiracy theory, but I think that this is, the numbers show that there's something going on.
Why is the stock market doing so well, Jamel?
Yeah, I think it's because it is very possible for capital markets to be improving because of the availability of investments here and abroad, but labor markets not improve in the same way, which is what you're seeing. Labor markets need consumer demand to really improve. No one's going to hire anyone if they don't have anything to, if they don't need anyone, if they don't have any buyers. But capital markets don't necessarily need that. And in fact, if you look at if the companies start doing extremely well, which are companies that are highly capital intensive, like Silicon Valley companies and so forth, it makes sense that this stock market boom is almost divorced from the economy that most people experience. And that is something that can happen. And it's a testament to the high inequality that we face and the extent to which Congress has done a fine job of ensuring a decent recovery for corporations, but not so much ensuring a decent one for ordinary people.
Thanks, Lynn, very much for the call. Whatever happened to immigration reform? Are we going to get anything or not?
I doubt it. You had the Senate vote to support a comprehensive immigration bill, but House Republicans do not see immigration reform as in their interest. And there's, I wouldn't even say a tight divide in the party. There's simply some conservative leaders who think they should go for it and a large number of members who don't. And because none of these people represent large numbers of Latino voters, they really see no political incentive for doing so. So until that changes, until either the House of Representatives switches hands or a sufficient number of Republicans view it as in their self-interest to do it, I don't think immigration reform is happening anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. And, Jamel, what are you looking at carefully this week?
This week I am looking very much at the ongoing controversies over the Affordable Care Act, over healthcare.gov. And then whenever it comes across the plate, I very much sort of react to what's happening in the news. And so as things come forward, I will, report, do some work, and see what happens.
Okay. Thanks, Jamel, so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Jamel Bowie, staff writer at The Daily Beast, our guest for all things political. He has written also for The American Prospect, The Nation, The Atlantic, CNN.com, The Washington Post. Covers campaigns, elections, policy, and public opinion. Thanks to KP Whaley for production of this show and on-air production of this program. Thanks for all of your calls. We always have All Things Political Mondays at 9. Hour 2, a documentary, American Progress, 13 years in the making. Quite a feat, so stay with us for that conversation.